We've been sitting down with labor leaders from across the country, talking about labor history, talking about current fights, what's important, what's going on. And I'm sitting here with AFSCME President Lee Saunders. Lee, thanks for taking time for us.
Glad to be here.
So, you know, you look at Labor History Month and you look at, you know, the history of this historic organization. I often think that maybe we don't talk about what you guys have done and what the history of this organization has been.
Well, I think we need to do a better job. Even within our own union, we need to do a better job about who we are and where we came from and what we have fought for so many years. We were formed in 1932 when a group of state workers in Wisconsin got together and said that they were tired of the patronage system. They wanted to have a seat at the table. They wanted to be able to talk about wages and benefits and working conditions. They wanted to gut and get rid of the fact that if a new governor came in, a lot of folks would get fired. So that's how AFSCME was formed in 1932. Since then, we've had some very historic moments within our union.
Right.
We started in Wisconsin and we organized state workers across the country. But in 1968 is a very pivotal moment for our union. That's when 1,300 sanitation workers went on strike in the Deep South.
Right. When I walked in, we saw one of the I Am a Man placards right there by the elevator.
And 1,300 sanitation workers went on strike for dignity and respect on the job and to have the right to be represented by a union. They went on strike because two of their brothers were actually crushed in the sanitation truck, trying to stay out of the bad weather, but they had nowhere else to go. And they were crushed inside that truck. So our folks, our sanitation workers that we represented said enough was enough, and they went on strike. And I think everybody knows the story that Dr. King decided that this was a big enough moment where he needed to provide support. And he traveled to Memphis on numerous occasions to support those AFSCME members, those striking sanitation workers, to make the point that you've got to connect labor rights and civil rights and human rights and economic rights.
Right.
Those are not separate issues, they're all connected. And Dr. King traveled to Memphis to connect those issues and ultimately gave his life there. But those sanitation workers kept on making their voices heard, and we ultimately settled that strike. And we have a proud union there today. And then you can look at other events that have taken place within AFSCME. I'll just mention one more. A group of sisters in Local 101 in San Jose, California, decided that enough was enough and that they went on strike because they were tired of being paid less than their male counterparts in the city of San Jose. That was in the mid-80s, and that was the first pay equity strike in this nation's history. And they weren't only supported by the sisters of Local 101, but they were supported by the brothers of 101 and the community at large, making a statement saying that it's unfair and it's not right, and we deserve better. And they ultimately won that strike. So I can go down the list with you, but we have such a proud tradition and a rich history in representing public service workers and making our voices heard, standing up, taking some chances. Ultimately, making sure that we have a shot at the American dream and that working families are treated fairly.
Now, each of those stories, and you go back to whether it's inequality, whether it's civil rights, whether it's women's rights, AFSCME and the labor movement really have, they've been at the forefront of those battles.
There's no question about it, and we're going to continue to be at the forefront, especially with the kinds of attacks that we're confronted with, that we're faced with today. I've been with the union for going on 40 years almost. I started off when I was 2 years old. I was still in diapers. You believe that?
I do.
Okay.
Look, at the end of the day, I grew up in a union family as well. And you understood that, you know, that contract made life better.
No,
and in times when you had to go on strike and you had to fight, the family suffered as well. But you knew at the other end, things were going to get better.
Because I've been around for a little while, I have never seen the viciousness of the attacks by people who don't want to hurt us. They want to take us out of the ballgame completely. They want to destroy us. They don't want us to be around. And we're the only thing, I believe, that stands in the way, where we're giving and providing an opportunity for working families to have a seat at the table. We grow the middle class when you have healthy and strong unions in this country. And there are some people that don't want that to happen. And so we're faced with a situation where I believe unions are very necessary, But I also believe that unions have got to make some changes in order to fight back against the challenges that confront all of us.
Do you think the union movement needs to be a little bit more militant, a little bit more into the streets, a little bit more into the communities?
Well, I think that we've got to change some of the things that we've been doing for many, many years. I think we've gotten complacent, to be quite honest with you. And I'm not just saying, pointing my finger at another union. I'm actually talking about AFSCME. I think that we stopped communicating effectively with our members across the country. So we actually took a look at this and we analyzed this and we were looking at things that we were doing right. But we also looked at things that we believed we were doing wrong and we wanted to fix those. So we have really developed programs over the past 4 or 5 years which enables us and develops a creative program to talk with our members one-on-one. Not only talking to our members, but listening to what they've got to say. We call the program AFSCME Strong, where we are working very, very closely with all of our affiliates across the country. Our affiliates have bought into this program based upon the fact that we've brought folks in, our leadership in, and we've talked about what we need to do to change, what we need to do to communicate in a better way with our members. And we've actually set some goals and some timetables around those goals. For example, one of the goals that we set was that we were going to have 1 million individual one-on-one conversations with members across the country. And we aren't there yet, but we've had about 620,000 individual conversations. And you'd be surprised the reaction that you get from members. Some would say, I've never really talked with my union before, my representative before. I've never had this opportunity to do so, and this is great. And we sit and we listen to what they have to say. And then we incorporate that into an overall program and an overall strategy. So internal organizing is extremely important, especially with the attacks that we're faced with right to work, the Supreme Court possibly taking agency fee away from us. So we've got to figure out ways to communicate. But we've also done something a little bit different also. We have done a lot of focus groups and polling. And our members understand the importance of collective action. They understand the importance of belonging to a union.
Right.
But they also want to be treated as individuals. And they want to be recognized for the important work that they do and the important services they provide to the public. So we're really targeting in on stories where members have every day done something special, okay? Either for their co-workers or for their communities as far as providing essential public services. And that pumps up our folks. It excites them because they're seeing the value of their work. And we've got to do more of that.
Right. Every day, you know, people need a pat on the back every now and again.
Mm-hmm. I always say this when I'm traveling, and I always get a laugh from this, but it's quite honestly, it's true. Sometimes when I speak, and I speak all over the country, I say that I feel like I'm riding in a 1957 Chevy.
Why's that?
In 2017. Huh. Because the 1957, although it was a great car in 1957, it's a great car. This is 2017. And it's not a great car now. And we've got to change our approach, and we've got to change our model, and we've got to act like we're in 2017. And I think that the only way we do that is going back to basics. And we educate, we communicate, and mobilize our membership all over the country. And that's exactly what we're doing.
Now, you brought up the Supreme Court a moment ago, because right now you see these attacks. I look at Kentucky, for instance, when the Republicans took power, first thing they pursued was right to work. We see all of these attacks. We see all of this pointed at you, pointing at organized labor. How concerned are we about the Supreme Court and what the Janus case may be going forward for your organization?
No, we're concerned, obviously, but we really have no control over what the Supreme Court is going to do. You know, we'll get our points out regarding the problems that we feel is associated with a right-to-work country, because that's essentially the case that they're considering, the Janus case. The Janus case will overturn 40 years of law. Overturn the Abood decision that came out of the Board of Education in Detroit that provides an agency fee. If you choose not to be a member, no one's forced to be a member. But if you choose not to be a member, then in many states across the country, you have to pay a fee because you still receive the level of benefits.
And I think there's some fairness that goes with that, because I don't think anybody in this country, when you sit down and talk to them, thinks that they should get something for free. I mean, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
But that's what this is about. It is a free lunch. I mean, it's like taking a group of friends to dinner, and everyone decides upon the restaurant you're going to, and you're going to split the bill. But at the end of the dinner, there's one character that's a part of the group that says, well, I really didn't like this restaurant, so I'm not paying, although their plate is clean and they're full, okay, because they've eaten. And it's the same kind of concept. I mean, unions negotiate contracts. We provide support, protection as far as grievances. We improve working conditions. And we get our power through members. And we get our power through member resources that are provided to the union. And so this is just another attempt to gut the power that we have. But let me tell you something. I mean, again, we can't control what happens right at the Supreme Court. But we're going to continue to do the kinds of things that we're doing under the AFSCME Strong program, the internal organizing, the communicating with our members and non-members alike. We're also treating external organizing as our number one priority. The labor movement, the numbers actually declined last year in both the public and the private sector. That's a bad thing.
That is a bad thing.
It's unfortunate.
Because that means wages, hours, conditions all get worse.
That's exactly right. But we actually grew last year. AFSCME grew by 12,000 people. So we must be doing something right, but we've got to keep our eyes on the prize. And we can't be afraid to continue to examine what we're doing to improve upon what we're doing so we can continue to be a strong union.
What do you say to the person who says, you know, maybe the right to work thing is the best thing that can happen because it's going to make you do all of those things that you're already doing, that it's going to make members more militant? Because I think back to my grandfather who, lived and died the Teamsters Union because it took him from poverty to a very solidly middle-class existence. And there was no, you couldn't pry his union card out of his hand. What do you say to the person who says, maybe this is a good thing?
I don't think it is a good thing. I mean, it's an attempt to weaken us. It's an attempt to destroy the middle class. We've got 28 states now that have right-to-work laws. 28. We have a Supreme Court that's considering a national right-to-work law for the public sector. It's an attempt to silence our voices, along with other attempts to silence our voices. We, in the state of Iowa, for example, a couple of months ago, we've had a collective bargaining law in that state, and it's a right-to-work state. But we've had collective bargaining in that state for the past 40 years. The legislation was introduced by Republicans in Iowa. It was passed by a Republican legislature, and it was signed by a Republican governor because they understood that working people needed to have a voice, and they needed to have a seat at the table. Well, in the last elections, the governor of Iowa was a Republican. The House is Republican-controlled. The Senate was, by one vote or two votes, Democrats, but we lost that advantage in November. So now we have the trifecta in Iowa where you've got a Republican governor, conservative, Republican House, and Republican Senate. The first action that they took was to gut the collective bargaining legislation that had been in place for 40 years. And it limits us almost completely, quite honestly, where we cannot bargain over benefits, working conditions. We can bargain over a little sliver.
They'll give you some
wages. They gave us something, but with major limitations. So essentially, the collective bargaining laws is gutted. But they also did something else. They decided that wasn't enough, and they made dues checkoff illegal. So we cannot have dues checkoff in state or local government where money comes out of the paychecks to pay the union dues. That is an attempt to destroy us. But you know what? We aren't fearful, and we aren't running away, and we aren't hiding. We're going out and we're organizing like never before, and organizing those members and non-members alike, saying, you're putting your lives at risk and your family's lives at risk because you don't have a seat at the table. And we've got to do something about it. And we're signing up. Those members, we're having to re-sign up members on bank draft, and we're signing up non-members. And we're also increasing our PAC contributions, voluntary contributions, so we can develop political momentum and a political campaign to possibly change this in 2018 and beyond. So, I mean, we're faced with so many challenges.
But opportunities
as well. The kinds of attacks that are unimaginable. But there are opportunities. And I'm the kind of a guy that looks at the glass as being half full, not half empty. And we take advantage of those opportunities. But it's all getting back to basics. It's all getting back to communicating and working with our members, treating our members as individuals, but also talking with them and listening to them and coming up with programs based upon those conversations.
Now, you've been doing this for a couple of years now. And as you pointed out, the Republicans in Iowa were the ones who passed it, were in favor of it. Now they're against it. When did this all change, in your opinion? When did you see this massive shift? Because there were pro-labor Republicans, just as there were, in my view, sane Republicans of the past. When did you see the
shift? Number is getting smaller.
It is getting smaller.
And smaller, isn't it?
It is.
I think that, and I'll go back a number of years, but when Ronald Reagan really took on PATCO, I think that sent a message, a loud message that...
That was the shot across the boardroom.
He was able to get away with it, and maybe we should do the same kind of thing. And I think that was not the beginning, but it was a part of the attempted destruction of the labor movement. I honestly believe that this has been a plan that's been on paper by the folks that want to destroy us. It's been a plan that's been there for a long,
yep.
long time. And now it's actually coming to fruition, and that's what we've got to face.
Well, if you go back and you read the Powell memo and use that as their blueprint, mission accomplished. I mean, they've really executed well.
Well, and they aren't finished.
No.
They aren't finished at all.
Because I argue they want to take us back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s and not the 1980s and 90s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's true. So, I mean, it's up to us. It's up to unions like AFSCME. It's up to our partners, our progressive partners. We can't engage in this battle by ourselves, meaning labor. We've got to continue to work with our progressive partners, people who believe in public services, people who believe that working families should have a chance at the American dream, people who believe that the only way that you move into the middle class is by having a strong union movement. We've got to go back to basics as far as working with those coalition partners, not in Washington, D.C. There's enough work in D.C. But I'm convinced that we've got to start from the grassroots up, and it's got to bubble up.
Absolutely.
From block by block and school district by school district and city by city and county by county and state by state. That's where the action is, and that's where we've got to really build the momentum necessary to win.
Absolutely. And, I go back to when I was a kid growing up in Cleveland. The idea of someone getting a union job meant, food at the end of the month, meant maybe moving up and out of the projects. And that message of, you're going to work hard, but you're going to make a decent living while doing it, I think that's been lost in the generations since I was a kid.
And we've got to promote that. We consider our members within AFSCME to be everyday heroes, the kinds of jobs that they perform every single day. They know that they aren't going to make a lot of money. They aren't going to be millionaires. But they want to be treated fairly and with dignity because they are providing essential public services to their families and to their neighbors and to their communities across the country. And they never quit on themselves. They never quit on their job. They never quit on their union. And they never quit on their communities. And we've got to continue to promote that.
Yeah. So let me ask you a last kind of line of questioning, because where do you see all these attacks happening? You see all of this stuff focused on, basically taking us back in pre-Lochner era. Where do you see the labor movement going? Because you're right. There's a lot of chaos. There's a lot of attacks. There's a lot of this stuff happening. Where do you see things going from here?
I'm just coming in today from Buffalo. And I spoke to the Buffalo Western New York Central Labor Council. And I talked about what we have been talking about, the need for labor to honestly look inwardly to determine what kind of changes need to take place. And I was not only speaking to AFSCME leaders, but I was talking with other unions who are part of the AFL-CIO. And I was telling them the same thing that I'm telling you, that we've got to get back to basics, and that we've got to re-engage in communicating with our members. We've got to re-engage in developing those positive relationships with our coalition partners and with our community partners across the country. We've got to, take a look at what's happening, develop a plan and a strategy. We've got to make our voices heard. We've got to get in the streets, and we've got to have an alternative and propose alternatives to what's happening in Washington, D.C. and across the country right now. I think that there is a new level of activism that is developing in this country based upon the November election.
Certainly.
I think people are frightened, they're afraid, they're scared about what could possibly happen. So if you look at the Women's March, it wasn't only a march in D.C., but it was a march in many communities.
All across the world.
Not only in the United States, but across the world. The Climate March, okay, May 1. All of these kinds of things were developing activism at the grassroots base, and that's what we continue to need to do. If we do that, and if we do it properly and we do it effectively, then we're going to have an army of people that are going to say enough is enough and we're taking our country back.
Right, because here's the thing, and this is where I've asked a number of labor leaders, as I'll ask you, the anger from November is real. There are communities who have been decimated by job losses, trade policies that have been abysmal, our infrastructure is crumbling, there's all manufacturing leaving. What do you do with that anger when President Trump doesn't deliver on the promises he made? And you see, as you pointed out, there's all this activism going on, but it seems like they're in their own little silos. How do we pull that back in to where labor is at the center of that?
You've got to connect the dots and you've got to channel that energy. And this is just not a labor issue. This is an issue that impacts on members, union members, and non-members alike. So we've got to be a part. The labor movement must be a big and major part of the change. But we've got partners outside of the movement that are willing to fight with us and alongside us. And we can't forget about them. We've got to work very closely to them. So we have, as I said, an army of folks who are saying we are angry and we are frustrated, but we aren't going to run and hide. We're going to do something about it. That's what we've got to develop.
Yeah, as I always say, this generation has to rediscover the concept of solidarity.
No question.
Absolutely.
No question.
Lee
Saunders. It's all about organizing and mobilizing and educating our members and our communities.
That's it. Taking to the streets. Lee Saunders, I appreciate you taking time for us. Great talking with you.
Good talking
Thanks
to you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.